Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and poisoning cases from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 46 and Happy New Year!
Merry New Year's 2021.
We made it through 2020! Yes!
Yes.
It's so, exactly the same!
Well, indeed, yeah. So, I mean, saying it can only get better seems like just tempting fate at this point, so...
Should we have that D-Ream song just playing really yes. optimistically and obnoxiously all the way through this episode with us rocking back
if
and
we do
forth?
That, we'll be dead by the end of the episode, so...
No doubt. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. Can't complain.
Aww.
I think I've survived 2020, that I'm still alive at this point.
I think you have too. Unless, as we have established before, you could be a ghost.
There is this distinct possibility.
Yes, because I've only seen you in Zoom form, really.
I only exist in Zoom form.
Any New Year's resolutions?
No.
No.
To be honest. Because I always do them, and then I always go, oh, fuck that, can't be arsed.
Do you make resolutions?
Well, no, I don't. But I think, this year I'm going to lose weight. This year I'm going to stop that. This year I'm going to do this. I never do any of it. I start off for about 3 days going, yes, and then I go, oh, bugger it, I want some cake.
These are all thoughts that we have, like, late at night after a heavy day going, yeah, tomorrow, absolutely going to
exactly,
get up at
yeah.
6 a.m. and go for a run. And then 6 a.m. comes and bacon.
6 a.m. comes, I'm going, oh, I fancy a gin.
After this year, I think it's fine. My New Year's resolution is to see anyone in a pub once.
and I can't do Dry January because of the podcast. So I blame everyone who listens to this for forcing me to drink.
See, I was thinking that, again, New Year's Day, when you know, the best of intentions going ahead and thinking, I might not do the whole of Dry January, but might have a week or two off of the alcohol, which is huge
no,
for us.
No,
and there was a sincere thought that went through my head of, like, we could maybe do
don't
a selection
you,
of...
Don't say it. Don't say it.
Don't say it.
I know what you're going to say. Don't say it.
Well, virgin cocktails.
It's rude and insulting to everyone. Yes. No. None of this non-alcoholic malarkey.
There are some people, shockingly, who don't drink, who listen to our show.
Mad.
And I know, well done for persevering through all of this sober. Like, we could do some virgin cocktails. And then another voice came into my head going, what are you talking about? That's awful. Back to bed with you. Back to your gin cave.
No, none of that.
Any poisonings this week?
No, I don't think so. Again, so I haven't seen many people, really.
No.
So I don't know. And I don't watch the news anymore because it's just generally far too depressing.
Were you watching the news just for updates on what you had done?
The news does not often report on me personally, I must admit.
Well, that's what I was asking is, you know, if you poisoned anyone going, well, I haven't seen anything. I haven't checked the news to see what I've been doing in my sleep.
Oh, I thought you were talking poisonings more generally, not me personally having murdered many people.
Well, I wasn't asking if there have been poisonings in the world. I don't know why it's taken us 46 episodes to establish this. Every time I...
So about every week you've actually asked me, Nick, have you killed anyone this week?
Yeah.
In fact, was what you've been asking. Right? Okay. The answer is still no.
Oh, it's good. We're starting the new year off on the right foot. I don't think there needs to be any poisonings this week because we've only just about recovered from the Christmas Day episode and the poisoning that was done to our liver with the
Four cocktails in one day. It was impressive going.
It wasn't just in one day. It was over the space of about an hour and a half for us.
That is true. It was a very condensed selection.
And it was so nice to see everyone sharing their cocktails on Christmas Day with us. But you know what we need to do, Nick?
What? What do we need to do?
Start of a new year. We need to start, as we mean to go on, by thanking people, being thankful. And we should start by thanking our Patreon subscribers.
We should indeed. They are delightfully marvellous people who are still joining us. You're crazy folk, but you're very welcome and we love you. So thank you very much to Slanty. Excellent name. Mr. or Mrs. Slanty, like you.
Slanty. And thank you to Joe Lucking. Thank you, guys, for joining us on the Patreon journey. You're very sexy.
Yes, absolutely. Before we started this, Sinead was regaling me about all the stupid things I say that are due to go out on the, the next Outtakes episode. Most of which I cannot remember at all saying, but I'm sure I did.
It's a joy re-editing those, because I do just save everything and just stick them in a file. I'll edit those later. And then listening back to 20 minutes of our mistakes and mad ramblings and strange tangents that I go off on. And then you remember, like, oh, when did we talk about this? And it's a joy. And you Patreon subscribers, you get to listen to all of the bonus outtakes, as well as an extra episode every single week. So, well worth joining us if you like what we do. Well, Nick.
Yes.
Are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Who doesn't want a cocktail on New Year's Day?
Who doesn't? We need one. Hair of the dog. Or, depending on how your hangover is, guys, we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
That would be quite a bad hangover to go with that option, I feel.
We've all been there once. We've all had that hangover where you do... little bit of your brain just goes, if I died, it would just be a lot easier. Death, I welcome death. I've had a good life. Yeah, hopefully none of you are in that sort of state. But it's lockdown New Year's Eve, so God knows what people have been making in their own houses.
I can't imagine there'll be many parties going on this evening, I have to say.
No, but there's a party for one or two, and then you're just mixing red wine and tequila together and seeing what happens, because... Okay, we're not leaving the house for a few weeks. So hopefully you guys are all feeling well. But you know what? We're going to go with the first one. Hair of the dog. Get a cocktail down you. Best cure for a hangover. Definitely. Well, it is Nick's story this week for episode 46. Hooray, hooray, hooray. But of course, we can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand.
Indeed not.
As it is Nick's story this week, he got to choose the secret ingredient inspired by the tale that we tell and will flavour our cocktail. And this week's secret ingredient is, Nick?
It is a banana, or several bananas, potentially. Not just the one.
A banana.
Bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
So, yes. Yes, I mean, many people have commented on this, saying...
Oh, yes.
Is this just an excuse?
Now, tell the people, is this just an excuse to use up the banana liqueur that you bought for one cocktail, but 2 weeks ago, I think?
Well, yes, see. Well, So, after the last banana-based cocktail, the fruit salad, was posted on the Facebook, there was a comment by one of our delightful followers, Francis Marshall.
Hello, Francis.
So hello out there. Thank you so much. Inspired by you, my darling. Thank you. Who posted a link to a website that listed loads of poisoners who had used food-based poisons or poisons within food. One of those poisoning stories was banana-based. So I did think at that point, hurrah, I have another excuse to use the banana liqueur. So that is what we have this week. We have a banana-based story and a banana-based cocktail.
See, Francis, that is the kind of work we like from our fans. Not only linking to different poison stories, but with cocktails involved as well.
Perfect.
You win all the prizes.
Absolutely.
You win 2021.
Have a banana.
Have a banana. Okay, so with bananas as your inspiration and this wonderful resource.
Absolutely. So with bananas, we have a cocktail. Yeah, I think Sinead will identify with, potentially. Will be right up her street. We have the Psycho Killer.
Yes, that's the name of it.
That's the name of it. Perfect
psycho
way to
killer.
Start 2021 with a Psycho Killer cocktail.
Perfect way to start the new year. I love it. I was getting worried when you were talking about bananas and up my street and things. I was like, where is this going? I don't know. Psycho Killer. That's also, I never would have gotten from banana to that.
No,
wondering what the killer did.
Banana is but one of the many ingredients in this cocktail, so we shall see where the episode leads us, I feel.
This sounds amazing already. We're already off to a roaring start for the new year. Nick, as ever, being the wonderful master mixologist that he is, has delivered me a little bottle of special liquid. So we're going to go into our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm, so we'll see you in a minute.
I'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
A psycho killer. I am liking the look of this one.
I mean, it is a beautiful colour. It's a beautiful,
I think it's almost neon. I don't know if you're getting that as well, because I've got the computer screen light is kind of reflecting it, giving that beautiful sort of orangey red neon.
It is quite stunning.
Cyberpunky kind of. Yeah, yeah. Ooh, love it.
So, well, hopefully it's gonna taste as good as it looks. We do have a bit of a history with good-looking cocktails being a bit
Yeah, but the brown ones.
Brown cocktails are the best. So I'm hoping this may be better.
Indeed. You now refuse to tell me what's in a cocktail before I taste it. Well, I know there's banana in here, and I'm shocked. Yes. I'll be absolutely shocked if it isn't that liqueur that you're desperately trying to use up. But I think it's time to dive in. So, Psycho Killer.
Yes.
Wish us luck, guys.
Psycho Killer.
Cheers.
Merry Christmas.
Whoa. Hair.
Ooh, wow.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah, what the fuck was that?
What's just happened?
Oh, that's... Huh? That's weird.
That's weird.
That is a strange drink.
I don't know what to say. I'm in shock. I'm in shock.
Has actually taken me surprise.
That's the most surprising, I think.
Bizarre that is.
I don't think either of us have had that reaction at the same time before.
No, that's a weird one.
So I'm getting the impression of there's something like a Campari in there. There's something bitter. Because there's a lot of bitterness going on now. And then it's...
You get waves of flavour going through it.
Yeah. But the first sip is so aggressive. Okay, second sipper?
Yeah, do it. Do it. And see what you think.
Is it like... Okay, right. So, second sip. Sorry, guys. That was great point. That was great audio material of us just going... I don't know. All right. Oh, this is so weird. Sorry. Okay, Psycho Killer is living up to its name.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, yeah. Oh, it's less violent. The first hit has dulled us. We're stunned, and now it's going to work. Okay, the second sip is less aggressive. Yes, now I'm getting more of a floral and a slight sweetness. There's still that bitterness there. Oh god, it's definitely in the Negroni category, isn't it? Where it's the first sip is hell, and then the third sip's heaven.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, that's why I say go for the second and the third, and it mellows down surprisingly fast.
But that first one, wow!
Oh yeah, that's a slap round the face.
Okay, so you got to talk us through it now.
I'm slightly bemused by that. I have to say that's the one of the first cocktails that's made me go, whoa, I don't know what that was. So we have a base of Irish whiskey,
right?
So that is the base
Bushmills,
of the
I take it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you're right. We do have Campari, which is that really bitter taste that gets less as you become used to, your palate becomes used to it. Like a Negroni, it becomes less. But this is slightly bizarre in the Campari here is actually been infused with cocoa nibs.
Wow! So, okay! A Campari infused with cacao nibs? Indeed. Witchcraft! Witchery!
Quite bizarre. I've never had such a thing. Campari infused with cocoa nibs, only for an hour and a half or so, sitting in there, so it's not like it's not one you have to plan weeks in advance. So you got that. Then, we do have the banana. The banana cure.
Showing a banana in there.
that's in there as well. Then we also have creme de cacao, a white chocolate liqueur, to enhance the slightly chocolatey flavour. And then lastly, to really enhance the psycho killer sort of theme we have going on, there are a few dashes of absinthe.
No. What? What is happening?
So, Happy New Year!
This is a nightmare in a glass. I mean, it doesn't taste that bad, but what?
It's interesting. Oh my god. Now you know the stuff's in there. You can taste the chocolate. You can taste the banana. You can taste the Campari.
Yes.
It's in there. It's really weird. It's not unpleasant.
And I'm getting a bit of the absinthe as well. That's the mystery flavour that I was missing.
And it's such a small amount of absinthe.
Wait, so we've got whiskey, then Campari, so bitter orange, then a banana you've thrown in there, then some chocolate, and then some absinthe, just for the hell of it.
Pretty much.
That is a 4 a.m. I don't want to work tomorrow. I'm going to see what happens. My wife has left me kind of concoction that you've taken, and what happens kind of deal.
I mean, it's an impressive one. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a classic. It's not one that traces its roots back for generations and years and years. It was actually developed in 2014 at Dead Rabbit in New York. which is quite a famous cocktail bar. Mm. And it was developed by one of their bartenders there.
Do you think it works?
I actually do. I quite like it. It's just weird enough that I like those really bizarre flavours. I do quite like it.
It's a one-off for me. It is literally on the cusp of being an absolute incident in a glass. It could very well go that way, but it's just teetering, hanging on the edge of still being quite lovely. So it works.
I wouldn't have more than one. I wouldn't have a second one.
I would not have a second one. It just as a one-off, and it's a big glass as well. It's a hefty measure.
Yeah, it's a large amount, especially if there's no citrus or anything like that. There's nothing to dilute it. It's pure alcohol.
You want one of them. I'm going to go out and say it, guys. You want one of these because it's absolutely insane. And you will probably have the same reaction of, what's happened to me? And then you're like, and then it kind of grows on you. But the combination should not work. If someone rocked up to you, I mean, actually, if they rocked up to you, Nick, you would go bring it on because you know how flavours work. The rest of us mere mortals would probably go banana and absinthe and chocolate and Campari. Get out of here, Satan!
And whiskey. Banana and whiskey, that classic combination.
Banana and whiskey. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Surprisingly good.
I just have an image in my mind of a giant banana in a glass of whiskey stirred. There we are, infused with flavour.
With a bar of dairy milk on the side. There we go. That'll do.
There will be some people lacking the ingredient. They'll have everything else apart from the banana bit and then just go, we just put a bit of banana in there and some vodka, it'll be fine. Psycho Killer, true to its name.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good one to start the new year with.
And it'll kill you. And we all know what absinthe does to us as well. We get very giggly on absinthe, so I think it's going to be a good episode, hopefully, if we're alive by the end of it.
Well, you say that. We must also tell a story this episode.
With our psycho killers firmly in hand, but suspicious, obviously, of what its next move might be. Are you going to take us on a journey?
I am going to tell you an exciting story.
Woohoo! And this is a very good week for it to be your story because this cocktail is so strong and I don't have to say anything now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we are starting the new year, starting 2021, with a tale of Angette Donovan Lyle.
Ooh, good name.
Yes, indeed.
Angette.
Good name.
Angette.
Angette. So Angette is born in the US state of Georgia in 1925.
Georgia, Georgia.
Quite. She is from an average middle-class family. Now, unlike many of our episodes where they're like, oh no, they were definitely poor and everything's terrible. She was like quite comfortably off. And she has a fairly unremarkable childhood. She wasn't down the farm sort of or down the mine with a plough on her back or anything like that. She was having a fairly jolly childhood.
Oh, good.
She was an average student. The only thing that wasn't noted about her was that she had the most charming personality. She was a delight. And she was able to bend most people, twist them round her little finger. And more often than not, she got exactly what she wanted.
Oh, never a good sign. Never a good sign. With a charming young girl, she's always going to turn out to be an absolute bunny boiler. If anyone has ever read a crime novel.
I mean, after this relatively unremarkable childhood.
Boring.
Boring. Moving on. In 1947, at the age of 22, she marries Ben Lyles Jr. Ben Lyles is from the same town. He's from a similar middle-class background.
Boring.
Boring. So boring.
They're boring. She was boring. He was boring. They met in the street. They went, would you like some tepid water? We shall meet in the park and look at the birds. Not the big birds. They're too exciting.
Only the tiny, tiny birds. His parents had opened Lyle's restaurant in downtown Macon. And after Lyle Sr. passed away, the restaurant passes to Ben. Mm-hmm. After they're married, Angette moves to the apartment above the restaurant and starts working there with her husband and her mother-in-law. I think restaurant may be an overly fancy word for it. It is all American diner type. It's the centre of the community sort of thing. It is a good comfort soul food. Southern
nice,
Southern
I
soul
like
food.
It.
Good hearty
Oh, I'm on
cuisine.
Board for that.
Here she finds her vocation. She loves it. She has a fantastic time. Her natural charm and likability make her a hit with all the customers. And it seems that the couple are onto a great thing. Two children soon follow. They have Marcia in 1948, so only a year later. And then Carla follows in 1951.
I like it.
I mean, it sounds idyllic and lovely. However, as with all great things, it is not to last.
Oh.
Now, prior to owning and running the restaurant, Ben Lyles had been in the army. At this time, so we presume he had probably fought in the Second World War, though I don't know whether in Europe or the Pacific. But it became obvious that he hadn't come away from the conflict unscathed at all. Ben began staying out late. He was drinking heavily, rolling in drunk in the early hours.
PTSD then, is he?
Well, yeah, exactly. Obviously, desperately horrendous, stressful thing has happened to him, and he is suffering. He is diagnosed with rheumatic fever at Veterans Administration Hospital in Dublin, which is a city not too far from where they are. Not, in fact, in Ireland.
They sent him to Dublin. That would be excessive at best, and also would not help his drinking.
But the doctors there believe that this rheumatic fever has been caused by conditions he had experienced while in the army, and his heart has been badly affected. He is declared completely disabled, unable to work, and issued with an army pension.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, it's fair enough, absolutely.
Awful, awful things were seen in the war.
Absolutely, for sure. And now, from this point on, he is scarcely seen at the restaurant. Only very rarely, now and again, he comes in, grabs the day's takings, and disappears.
Oh.
Off to some backroom poker game. So he's taking his pension, and he is taking any money that his mother-in-law and his wife are earning at the restaurant.
Well, he's not that unwell then, is he?
Well, yeah.
If you've got enough money to go and gamble.
Well, quite. In June of 1951, just after the second daughter is born, Ben Lyles Jr. sells the restaurant.
Okay.
This comes completely out of the blue to his wife. She is horrified. They have not discussed this at all. He rocks up. He's got a buyer for it. It's just, Jesus, we need to leave. Someone else is coming in. He claims that his failing health means that he is unable to continue with the restaurant, but seeing how he spends so little time there anyway and takes no interest in the run of the place, it seems like an unlikely excuse. He sells the restaurant for $2,500.
That's not a lot.
It is a stupidly cheap price.
No, this is what, 1940, late 40s?
We're in the 50s.
Oh, in the 50s? Oh, bloody hell. That's like, here's a tenner. There we are.
Exactly. We're 1950, 51.
Oh, I don't like him. I don't like him at all.
He sells the
restaurant. I'm sorry for his trauma during the war. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for your service. We're indebted to you. But there's a limit. There's a goddamn limit. Quite. Not a lovely diner. Not a lovely diner that's making money. And you just want to set it for your ill-gotten gains.
Well,
you bastard.
He continues his drinking. Quite soon, his alcoholism becomes known to the doctors at the Veterans Hospital. And his pension is reduced by 90%.
Really?
They can do that. They say, well, you are not spending the money on living or supporting a family. You are spending it on drink and gambling. Therefore, why should the government prop up this habit? This money could be much better put to use elsewhere with someone who is going to use it to better their life, not just drink it away.
That's a bold step. I didn't know they did that. I mean, in this case, I'm thinking, yes, that's quite a good idea.
Apparently,
you know.
Apparently so. Angette and the two children are forced out of the restaurant. Mm. Luckily, they still have a roof over their heads, but she is forced to beg relatives for money, take handouts from the church and things for clothes, secondhand clothes for her children. She has come from a really popular, vivacious character known around town to begging, and she is humiliated by this, absolutely mortified that it's come to this.
God, I can imagine.
In December 1951, Ben Lyles begins bleeding from the nose and mouth. He becomes delirious. His arms and legs swell, and sporadically his body goes rigid, or his limbs would spasm and convulse. On the 25th of January, Ben falls into a coma and he never wakes up.
Oh my God.
The declared cause of death, encephalitis, an inflammation of the brain. The doctors believed was a result of his underlying rheumatic fever.
Is it though?
So they explain, well, they explain it away. He has this diagnosis. He's obviously a very troubled man. The death goes unquestioned and unremarked.
Interesting. That makes me think.
I'm glad.
I'm thinking this is one of the cases where the doctors were leaning towards a diagnosis, possibly knowing what the real one was. But you know what? Let's just not raise questions about this drunken, horrible man.
We'll discuss that. Angette is now a widow with two small children.
No.
She and her daughters move back to her parents' home. But she finds work in another little local restaurant. Yeah. She finds work as a bookkeeper this time. And she is determined to learn as much about the business and the running of business as she can.
Is she Mildred Pierce? Can I just point this out? Because if it is, brilliant.
She is determined and incredibly hardworking to make a better life for her. And only 4 years later, in 1955, she's able to buy back Lyle's restaurant.
Aww. Yay!
The restaurant that she believed her husband had stolen from her. She renames the restaurant Angette's.
She's literally Mildred Pierce. This is the story. This is great. Oh, God, it's Joan Crawford there with huge shoulder pads. I love it.
She has to pay $12,000 for the restaurant.
Sold now, it for $2,000.
$2,500 4 years
ago. Wait a minute, $2,000? $12,000, that's... Wait a minute.
That's a lot.
That's math I can't even do. It's $10,000 more.
It's a lot of money more. Well, this is what it should have been sold for in the first place.
That was what the lawyer said. How much do we have to pay? A lot.
So she's got her restaurant back. She is real bit rebuilding her place in the town. As we said before, the food is typical Southern fare. People flock there for the ambience and her personality. Mm. She drives it forward, and people are attracted by her friendliness and outgoing personality.
Mm. That's what you want in a good local restaurant.
Well, yeah,
it doesn't
absolutely
have to be high cuisine, just good, honest food.
Exactly. It quickly becomes the most popular restaurant in town. I mean, her customers include also businessmen, judges, attorneys, civic
leaders.
The
one attorney they had.
The one attorney, yeah. Bob the attorney, he's been there.
God, he'll eat us out of house and home quickly. He always argues over the bill.
She was a headstrong woman who sometimes stretched the boundaries of acceptable behaviour.
Oh, really?
In a 1950s small southern town.
Okay, what do you do?
She drives flashy sports cars.
Yes.
She dresses in the newest styles and fashions from New York and things like that.
Oh my God, I love her.
She's incredibly flirtatious with male customers.
Nice.
There are rumours and gossip around the town about her carryings on with various men, but there is no concrete proof of anything.
As is her goddamn right.
Whoa, absolutely. Ooh. I'm all there for it. But 1950s small town America has perhaps not caught up with her particular lifestyle at the moment.
Just picturing Joan Crawford through all of this. I'm sorry, I can't get it out of my head. I love that
film. I have not watched Mildred Pierce, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
How have you not seen Mildred Pierce? Oh my God. Okay, so Joan Crawford film, later on it was made into a miniseries with Kate Winslet and Guy Pearce. It was a very good adaptation, but the original, proper melodrama. You're going to talk of nothing but Joan Crawford.
Well, often I talk of nothing but Joan Crawford, but...
She's great. No wire hangers ever.
Right, moving on with the story.
Go ahead.
In the late spring of 1955, Angette begins dating Joe Neil Gabbett, a pilot for Capital Airways. The restaurant has become the go-to spot for airline employees at the nearby airport, and he is a frequent visitor. Later that year, she accompanies Gabbett on a trip to Texas and then on to New Mexico, and the two surprise their friends and families by marrying in New Mexico. On the 24th of June 1955, they have eloped, they have told no one, they have gone to New Mexico, though they have married, causing yet more gossip and rumour throughout the town.
Scandal. Oh,
well, indeed. Now, Gabbett is, obviously, he's a pilot, he's not often home, his job takes him all over the country.
You would hope, yes.
Well, yeah, Angette is left to her own devices. She's still running the restaurant, she's still got stuff to do, and every now and again, when he's back in town, he's back, which is marvellous. But don't know what's going on there.
When he's back, he's there.
He's there.
Oh, you're there. Oh, you're there. Oh, there. That's where you are. You're there.
But only 4 months later, Gabbett is admitted to Parkview Hospital.
Oh, no.
He has developed a severe and incredibly painful rash that covers most of his body. His fever has spiked and his arms and legs begin to swell. Now, after several nights in hospital, his symptoms begin to subside. And he's feeling so much better. So much so that they release him from the hospital and he is allowed to go home. But within days of being home, the symptoms begin to reappear. They begin to return.
How swollen are his arms and limbs? Is this just a light swelling that's noticeable, or is he like the Michelin man?
I think probably a light swelling. I don't think we're sort of talking sort of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory sort of levels of swelling going on.
Bouncing
here.
His way to the hospital.
But noticeable painful swelling.
Ooh, I don't think we haven't come across swelling yet.
Well, no, we haven't. No.
No,
we haven't got a swelling, but now we have. He is readmitted to hospitals where doctors try but cannot find the cause of his illness. Gabbett never recovers.
Ooh.
He is eventually transferred to the Veterans Hospital in Dublin, but he dies there on the 2nd of December 1955.
Why Gabbett, though? Nice lifestyle. Everything seems fine.
It would appear
fine.
So. Well... Yes, everything appears fine.
Appears fine, but pull back the curtain of suburbia.
Well, quite after the death, Angette is reported to have told several people that he was incredibly mean.
Oh.
That he was not a nice man. In behind closed doors, he was a vicious drinker. Now, whether that was true, I mean, being drunk on an airline pilot is not a good combination, so...
It's not on the job. But it's also part of the job very much in the 50s. I mean, yes, I'm not going to say that I've read a huge amount about pilots in the 50s, but pilots in the 50s were celebrities. Like,
oh,
literally
for sure.
Celebrity level. If you were a pilot or if you were an air stewardess as well. But yeah, you were celebrity level. So you would be flying, but you would be wined and dined. You would be having people flocking around you. And a lot of, you know, and this is again the time of like whiskey, 10 in the morning. Of course, yes, it's a business meeting. There we are. Mad Men. Think Mad Men crossed with Catch Me If You Can. And there's the picture.
And no doubt he enjoyed a drink. But whether he was violent with it or abusive or mean... I suspect potentially that was something that was made up.
Well, we don't know. We don't know.
Well, we don't know. But also, it was came out later that when a nurse asked Angette if her husband was insured, which seems like a strange thing for a nurse to ask, to be honest.
Well, no, you would have to, because in America there's no public health.
No, but this refers to life insurance, not a medical insurance.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Ooh.
Angette is said to have replied, yes. And his mother won't see a penny of it. I've seen to that.
Oh.
So, yes, I appreciate a medical insurance question, but a life insurance question seems like a strange thing for a nurse to ask.
It's not a very tactful way of going. If you're saying, like, how is my husband? Well, first of all, do you have life insurance?
Well, yes. It may have been that type of conversation.
Do you have life insurance? Because he's not doing too well. Oh, I've seen to it. Don't worry. Right. This did not go the way I was planning it to be. I was trying to be tactful and it didn't work. that is cruel. That is beautifully cutting. I like that.
Yes, indeed. Now, doctors want to autopsy the body, but Angette refuses. I promise him I'd never let anyone cut him up, she says. But the doctors do not need her approval for this, and they proceed. But they find nothing unusual. They find nothing untoward.
Really?
Yes, surprisingly so.
What? He's swollen up like the Michelin man. Maybe not the Michelin man, yes. Maybe in my head, yes, but still, nothing's in there.
But apparently they find nothing that would explain what has happened. Soon after her second husband's death, Lars goes to the county court to have her name changed from Gabbett back to Lyles. Again, her first married name. So not even her maiden name. She changed it back to the name of her first husband.
Okay.
With the money she receives from the life insurance policy, she buys a new car and a new house. So it was a considerable sum. She also sparks yet more disappointing gossip around town when only a few months after her husband's death, she begins dating yet another Capital Airway pilot, a chap called Bob Franks.
Oh, right. Oh, well, you know, it's like, his body's not even cold.
Well,
and again,
yes.
If you're working your way around the Capital Airline pilots,
she's going through them all.
Maybe branch out. Go to Pan Am.
Now, soon after she buys her new home, her first mother-in-law, Julia Lyles, moves in with her.
Oh,
The elder Mrs. Lyles is lonely and she wants to be close to her grandchildren.
Sure.
Now, she spends most of her days at the restaurant that she and her husband had once owned, which now belonged to her daughter-in-law. One day, Angette is going through some of the older woman's possessions in a slightly sneaky going through someone's stuff sort of way.
As you do. I don't know where you drop that in there. Going, well, she's just going through all of her things.
Well, she's just going through all of her stuff, going, oh, what's this? And she finds a bank book which reveals that her mother-in-law has over $11,000 in savings. A considerable sum.
Yes, and the daily going through of your guests' things. I mean, if you stay at my house, I will go through your shit as well. I'll just go in there and just like, oh, what face creams do they have? I'm not looking for your bank books. I'm just like, oh, have you got fancy... Oh, she's got the fancy perfume. Oh, she's got the good soaps.
Don't stay at Sinead's.
Oh, no, do, please. We're so lonely. I won't go through your stuff much.
Much. Yeah, just a little bit. She begins pestering Mrs. Lyles to make a will, but Mrs. Lyles refuses to do so. She is not going to be persuaded.
Good for her.
See, now we are going to have an interesting interlude in the story.
Wait, an interesting interlude?
An interesting interlude.
Oh, I like that. An interesting interlude.
Now, in many of the reports that I've read on this case, there is reference that Angette is deeply superstitious.
Oh, I like it.
Incredibly so. She is a regular at fortune tellers and at voodoo practitioners. While many people would associate voodoo with sort of New Orleans and Louisiana, it is prevalent throughout the South, the Southern states. and she does not have to go far into the more rural communities to find those that still believe and still practice these ways. And she's right there trying to learn what she can and talking to these people. Now, it is reported that she tries to cast her own spells. She burns candles and performs her own rituals. Now, we do not know the purpose or the goal of these rituals, but apparently it was not uncommon for restaurant staff to find her burning candles in the kitchen and speaking into the flames.
In the kitchen?
In the kitchen of the restaurant.
The most sacred and
after hours or something.
Well, no, during the lunch service.
Just during lunch service.
Everyone's just like, more chicken and waffles. Yeah, spells, candles are everywhere.
It's a strange thing that all these reports reference this aspect of her life. I don't know if it has any bearing on what she did or what we're talking about, but it's a strange thing that was brought up time and time again, probably because it's got that sort of, oh, that's weird. Sort of vibe about
she's
it.
A witch.
And like, oh, it's voodoo. She's a witch. Burn the witch. Fry the witch.
Fry the witch. Well, that was the problem in the kitchen. Put her in the fryer. I will speak on behalf of, yes. Oh, I've never lit candles and done a ritual before. Do that every season, quite frankly.
All the time.
Yes, compared to, let's go to church and burn incense and burn all the candles for an hour. Oh, that's perfectly normal. So maybe let's not judge her for her own particular practices.
No judgment whatsoever. It was just interesting that it was has been so heavily remarked upon. It has not, it seems to have nothing to do with the case or these deaths, but it is linked to her story.
Let's draw the fact that she's maybe into slightly pagany, not Christian arts or a different kind of religion. That means she's evil. Yes, us
quite
Christians
right,
can
indeed.
Judge everyone. So, sounds great.
Well, quite.
Sounds great if she's in the middle of the kitchen, in the middle of lunch service, just lighting candles all over everything. Please bless this chicken. It'll be good.
I mean, do you think about it? A restaurant is probably the perfect cover. They've got lots of flames. They can chop up lots of animals, lots of sacrificing going on. It's I've ordered like a fuck ton of chickens
oh
that I need to kill for lunch.
My God, that's genius. Why aren't we doing that?
Absolutely. Perfect cover. If she was using her magic to achieve her ends, we don't know. She certainly wasn't hesitant about helping the spirits along with a bit of practical assistance of her own as well. Now, Julia Lyles, the mother-in-law, becomes ill in August of 1957.
Shocking.
Surprisingly so. Angette stays and cares for her during her month-long stay in hospital, and she earns the admiration of everyone around for the devotion she shows to her mother-in-law. She often brings Mrs. Lyles' favourite food from her restaurant to the hospital. And that banana pudding was quite the treat.
Her favourite thing was banana pudding.
It was one of her favourite things, apparently, from the restaurant.
Oh, my God!
That Angette would bring to her spoon feed while she lied in bed.
Tiny, tiny interlude here. Banana pudding. I actually don't know. I could look this up. I could Google it. But, you know, that's what our listeners are here for. I don't know what pudding is in America compared to England. So pudding in England is another word for dessert. But you might have, there's type, like bread and butter pudding or sticky toffee pudding. It's usually something suety, something quite heavy, cakey almost. Pudding is kind of an all-capsulating word. I feel like in America, pudding...
I think it's something slightly more specific.
Is it like mousse or something? Like,
yes,
like,
exactly. I think that's exactly the thing. It's
almost
yeah,
like Angel Delight would be over here, maybe. Yes. It's something moussey or like a
something
treat or something.
Something gelatin-y sort of.
Yeah, that. So she's not getting a stodgy, lovely, delicious thing. She's just getting a moussey whipped thing.
I'm sure it's delightfully delicious.
Well, American listeners, please chime in on the notes of this episode on any of the social medias and tell us what pudding is. Tell us what pudding is. We could Google it, but we want you to tell us instead. It will be far more entertaining.
Now, the doctors do not object in the slightest to this. They think that a taste of home would only help her recovery. It's only going to encourage her to get better all the sooner.
Yeah, sure.
But unfortunately, they are never able to diagnose the cause of her symptoms, the vomiting, the cramps, the nausea, the diarrhea. They can't see why this is.
No, surely not. No, of course.
Angette confides in the nurses that she is quite sure that her mother-in-law is not going to make it. At one point, she actually declares... It doesn't look like she's going to live. And she produces a note, supposedly signed by Julia, authorising Angette to make funeral arrangements for her.
What?
She's still alive in the bed at this point. But she supposedly signed something that said, yes, I'll be dead soon. Please arrange my funeral.
Okay, does she not understand that's not how the hospitals work? She can't give a doctor a note and say, she just said she's going to be dead soon, so you have to make her dead. It's no what
yes.
What
she knows things that the others don't, I suppose.
Oh, here's the funeral arrangements, by the way. She's still very much alive. No, she signed a note saying she's gonna die tomorrow.
Not for much longer. Not for much longer. Now Julia Lyles does die on the 29th of September 1957.
Oh my God, as her note would tell,
the banana pudding cure has proved unsuccessful.
Bananas, the greatest poison of them all.
She is buried beside her husband and her son.
Oh.
A week later, Lars produces what she claims is her mother-in-law's will.
Of course.
In which the majority of her estate is left to Angette Lyles and her two daughters.
Of course.
Where else would it go?
To the pudding factory.
So two husbands and the mother-in-law behind her, and several very comfortable inheritances. People have still got no inkling whatsoever that anything is awry.
But she's so charming.
Just a very unlucky and increasingly tragic figure in town, so desperately unlucky. It's not until eldest daughter Marcia grows ill in the winter of 1958 that townsfolk become suspicious of all these deaths of the people closest to Angette Lyles. Marcia develops a fever. It is so high that the doctor that's called in to look on her admits her to hospital straight away. Angette follows her daughter down the hospital corridor. Quite bluntly, spoke to the doctors. I think she's going to die.
Jesus Christ. What?
She's not a subtle woman.
Okay, good. Right.
At the same time, in a nearby city of Cochrane.
What?
taking you on a journey.
Right, okay, cut away.
So in the neighbouring... cut away. To Julia Lyles' sister, Nora Bagley.
Ooh,
she's
nice
sitting there and she receives an anonymous note.
Through the window on a brick.
Through the window on a brick. Or possibly like slipped under the door or just in the mail.
Far more subtle.
Please come at once. She's getting the same dose as the others. Please come at once. The note says.
Oh, I love it. Who? What?
Who?
Mm. What?
Marcia's health rapidly deteriorates and she becomes delirious. She believes that bugs are crawling across her skin.
Oh no, poor thing.
She'll soon be going home to little Ben and her grandmother, Angette predicts.
What the fuck? What? Shush, woman!
The girl dies on the 4th of April, 1958. Ugh. Now, thankfully, Julia's sister has been suitably alarmed by this note that she has gone to the hospital and she has spoken to Marcia's doctors herself. Unfortunately, it was too late to prevent a death, but an autopsy is performed on the child's body and they discover fatal quantities of arsenic.
Arsenic alarm. Okay.
Arsenic alarm.
Two things. How old is Marcia?
She I don't know the exact age now, but she's probably going to be, I think, early teens.
Oh God, poor thing. So still fairly young here. Secondly, the swelling of the limbs with arsenic.
Well, indeed, yeah, there's some interesting symptoms.
did she have swelling of the limbs? Did she have the same thing?
Marcia didn't.
She didn't.
Marcia didn't, not that I've read, she didn't have those particular symptoms.
Oh, okay. But we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that in a minute. But yes, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. Oh, was it the other sister who sent the note? Was it Carla? Did Carla send the note to her aunt saying, I'm tearing this case apart right now. Oh my God. Edge of my seat, guys.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Now, after they discover this arsenic in Marcia's body, the police are obviously immediately alerted. Investigations are begun, and they discover the death of or Marcia's father, and then Angette's second husband, and the mother-in-law, and they decide, right, we need to have a look at this, we need to really do some investigation here, and they exhume the three other bodies, and it is determined that all three have died of arsenic poisoning.
Gasp. And they all were swollen and had arsenic.
Yes, indeed. So that is a symptom that we have not really come across before. With the second husband, the rash that was across his body.
Yeah.
So not symptoms that are common with arsenic.
Yeah.
But apparently do happen. I did do some research. I did do some Googling. Okay. Not come across that before, but it can happen, apparently, and it did.
Mm.
I think perhaps with the first husband as well, we also have to take into account there was the rheumatic fever there as well. So it could be a combination symptoms going on for
yes,
that
Yes, we
one.
Don't know what each of these people's medical history was, apart from the little tiny bits of it. And you don't know what quantity of arsenic was used. You don't know what kind of arsenic was used, because arsenic has advanced from just rat poison from the olden days.
Well, indeed. But you say that. But police begin a search of Lars' house and turn up several boxes of ant poison.
Ant poison, you see? It's smaller.
So it has progressed to the ant poison.
Jesus Christ, ant poison for arsenic for ant poison. That's a lot.
Apparently
that's a bit much for the ants. Leave the ants alone. That's going to make them explode.
They also discover what is referred to in testimonials as her voodoo paraphernalia.
Oh.
Just a very dramatic way of saying, oh, she's got a box of candles.
She has a box of candles and a feather. She's a witch! She had a bra in the house. No!
Surely not. On the 6th of May 1958, Lars is arrested and charged with 4 counts of murder. The case becomes an immediate sensation, and her trial attracts actually worldwide attention. Huge crowds stand outside the courtroom, hoping to glimpse at what one paper refers to as the glamorous platinum-haired widow.
Ooh,
she is known.
She's shiny.
She's not the Georgia Borgia, which I think they missed out. They missed a trick on that one.
Is that what you were thinking the whole time?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking Georgia Borgia. That's a great one.
Oh, yeah, that's damn good. That's damn good.
That's fun to say, that one.
The glamorous platinum-haired widow is terrible, actually, for a headline.
Yeah.
Whoever was writing that up, the glamorous platinum-haired widow, would you not consider Georgia Borgia? Shut up! It's my paper!
That was something like work experience kid going on there. Now, during the trial, witness after witness are brought before the jury and they testify against Angette. The sheriff's office introduce a piece of paper taken from Angette's house where the name Julia Lyles has been written over and over and over and over and over again.
Oh.
On this piece of paper. A handwriting analyst shows that Julia's signature on the funeral note and the will are forgeries, complete fakes. So this piece of paper is obviously Angette's practice runs.
Mm.
Why the hell you wouldn't throw something like that away? I have no idea.
If you're also going to walk around a hospital going, she'll be dead by the morn, I don't think you're going to be that careful about stuff. She's probably that arrogant that she thinks it's going to work.
Well, indeed. Others also testified that Julia's hands were so useless at the end of her illness that there was no way she could have written or signed anything. Restaurant workers also state that they have overheard Angette speaking about Julia and saying, the old devil, I hate her, I wish she were dead.
Oh, for God's sake.
Which is, why would you say such a thing in public?
Particularly if you've killed many beforehand.
Yes. Another employee relates a comment that Angette has made about her daughter. She says, I'm going to kill that little Lyle-looking son of a bitch. It is the last thing I ever do.
Just fairly cut and dried. Yeah.
Which is, yeah, absolutely.
There's not a lot of nuance around there.
For a mother to say against their daughter, no matter how much of a bastard the husband,
oh, yeah,
the father may have been, to say such a thing as that is a...
Oh, she's horrible. Evil.
She's
evil
a nasty,
woman.
Nasty person. The husband of a waitress has heard the same thing. Plus, Angette telling Marcia that if she doesn't sit down and behave, she's going to kill her.
Oh, it's a bit harsh.
One of Marcia's hospital doctors reports that when he tells Angette that Marcia was improving, that she responds, well, it can't last much longer. She's going to get worse again.
Oh, for God's sake.
And he says this to a doctor at the hospital.
So she's very publicly willing people to die.
After a week-long trial, the jury only need 1 hour to return a verdict. Guilty. Angette Lyles was sentenced to death in the electric chair.
Ooh.
The appeals start almost immediately.
Yeah.
Straight away. In prison, Angette claims to have found God.
In prison? He was there? He was there the whole time?
He was there in the cell next door.
He was doing hard time.
She acts increasingly strangely for the benefit of the psychiatrists who are sent to see
course,
her.
Of course, because she wants an insanity plea.
Precisely so. For her appeals are rejected.
Good.
And she is transferred to Reeseville State Prison for execution. In front of the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles, she says, I didn't murder, I didn't kill. She does admit to forging Julia's will, but she is returned to death row.
Well, then who killed them? If she forged stuff, then who killed them?
She has no identification of whoever did kill them. I forged the will, I didn't kill anyone. But, in a further twist, the governor of Georgia grants a stay of execution.
Okay.
Again, before the Board of Pardons and Paroles, she not only this time accuses Julia, her mother-in-law, of killing Ben Lyles, Angette's second husband, Joe, and also then committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But she claims that her own mother, Jetta Donovan, who has stood by Angette throughout this, is the one who killed Marcia.
Right, sure. No.
Utter bollocks going on there.
Bollocks, woman, was the verdict, I think, from the board. It was just bollocks written across everything.
But she's also onto something, because after all these claims and outbursts and random things, plus the reports from the psychiatrists, the board are convinced that she is, in fact, utterly insane. She's absolutely crazy. But they are also scared or worried that if they reduce her sentence, that there would have been a public uproar.
Yeah.
Absolute fury of this. So they actually speak to the governor, and they get the governor to appoint a sanity commission comprised of a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a medical doctor to rule once and for all on her state of mind.
Okay. So a bit like a sanity clause. Oh, that's silly. There ain't no sanity clause.
So funny. The diagnosis comes back. Chronic paranoid schizophrenia.
Okay.
And by Georgia law, they cannot execute an insane person. Angette is transferred to the Milledgeville State Hospital with the instruction that if she was ever cured of her mental illness, she should go straight to the electric chair.
Okay. So she got to act mad now.
She's got to act mad
for many, many years.
In the hospital, Angette studies her magic arts, and she tells fortunes with playing cards to other inmates. She tells a friend. Now, this is where I'm going to call on Sinead's expertise for Crazy Evil American Lady.
Okay, right. So, I'm not sure how to feel about that, but I'm going to go with it.
So.
Oh, he's sharing his screen. He's sharing a screen. Okay, yes.
So I want you to...
It's just a lot of porn right now.
There's an awful lot of porn going on there. But in your best crazy Southern American lady accent, I want you to read that highlighted section.
Oh, God, Southern accent. I'm trying to think. I'm so sorry if I just do a generic Southern accent. So I'm going to get a Southern accent like that. They think I'm crazy as hell, and I'm going to let them keep thinking it. Because if they don't, they are going to fry my ass.
That is exactly what she says to a friend at the hospital. And she pulls it off. She convinces them that she is crazy as hell for the rest of her stay.
Well, yeah,
she
fair
spends
enough.
20 years
being crazy
at Milledgeville Hospital.
Every morning she has a pillowcase on her head and two pencils up her nose.
She dies December the 4th, 1977, at the age of 52. In a rather strange twist of fate at the end, Angette Lyles is buried beside her husband and her daughter. Two people that she herself has sent to their graves.
God.
There's the story of Angette Lyles, the crazy, crazy Georgian lady.
Amazing! amazing. I love that story. Yay. Oh, she's not Mildred Pierce. I've decided she's horrible.
She moved on from Mildred Pierce.
She definitely moved on from Mildred Pierce. Everyone watch Mildred Pierce. Great film. But yeah. Oh, no. Oh, she a crazy bitch. The thing is, she had everything. She had it all set up. I can understand. Well, caveat. When we say we understand things, we're never condoning murder, people.
Glad to hear
but first husband, bit of a shit, complete drunkard, gambler, sells the business from under her. Yeah, slips him the poison. But then she has the captain, the pilot.
Seems like a perfectly lovely chap.
Exactly. But then she just does away with him.
Yep.
Doesn't want to be. Well, I suppose you're a woman in the 50s. You're going to be controlled, and maybe your husband is going to be a bit of a shit.
Maybe
So maybe there's that. But then, yeah, the sympathy just runs out after that. Mother-in-law.
I see you've got a lot of money, therefore.
Literally,
yeah, off you go.
Yeah, that was greed. Yeah, and then the daughter as well.
And then the daughter is just insanity. It's just there's no reason whatsoever for that.
If you've got a bad relationship, go to counselling. Just do something else. Spend some time apart.
Terrible. One thing that I came across as well is that at Marcia's funeral, she was heard saying to someone that Carla, the younger daughter, she said she had heard saying that how Carla wanted to join Marcia and her father in heaven.
Oh, for God's sake.
I find that very unlikely that Carla has said that. It was just
no child's going to want to do that.
Planning her next adventures.
It moves from this quite sort of melodramatic picture of a wife in the 50s and trying to make her own way to all the talk in the hospital of,
oh,
she's definitely going to die soon. Oh, don't worry, she'll get worse. Oh, my daughter, she wants to die. My other daughter, she wants to die as well. It just seems to spiral into utter insanity. It is insanity. I can understand the commuting of the death sentence in that case, because she's crazy. She's going to then have to act proper crazy for the rest of her days.
Oh, yes. She absolutely is. She's got to keep that act up.
But to be fair, she is crazy.
Well, that's true, actually. It's probably not much of an act. But she's going to...
It depends on the level of crazy.
There is, if she said what she has said in the hospital, she was obviously aware, had that much self-awareness that she knew if she were to come across as sane, then she would have been for the chair.
I think all of her actions seem to point towards this was premeditated. Everything that she did was premeditated. Sure. She has mental illness, clearly, on that much more obscure level of just she crazy, why the fuck is she doing this? But she was clearly planning it out, and she wasn't not in control of her faculties when she did all of this. But then to pretend that she was just crazy and fleeing arsenic around willy-nilly to certain people who were very close to her is ridiculous. But then she has to play that dance for the rest of her life to escape the chair. Yeah, she wasn't crazy. She wasn't that kind of crazy. She was a different kind of crazy. She was, if you will, a psycho killer.
She was indeed.
Let's play the song, Psycho Killer, yeah. And on that note, that grew on me an awful lot, the psycho killer.
I know. I've just finished that and I actually do feel slightly insane at the moment.
I do feel insane, but I kind of want another one, but I shouldn't. That's the danger with these drinks, guys. You start off with them and go, oh God, you should never have a second one of these. But then they mellow and then you're like, yeah, oh, I'm feeling quite festive and happy. And you think, oh, another one of these would be fine. Don't do it. I mean, we might, but still. Psycho killer, very, very interesting cocktail.
Yeah, indeed.
If by some miracle you have all of the ingredients
in
your house.
I think there are a few people out there who might, I have to say.
God damn it, do it. Do it, try it, see what happens. And what do you think of Angette's story? That's a great story. Proper melodrama all the way through. What are your theories about, you know, was she crazy? What degrees of crazy do we want to accept on this show and what don't we want to accept? We're not here to judge. Well, we're definitely here to judge, actually.
Sinead judges all an awful lot. She's a very judgy person.
Very, very judgy person. Thank you so much, Francis, for the inspiration for this week's episode. What a great find.
So, as Sinead always says, if you do know of a story, if you've got a little local story somewhere, let us know, because absolutely, these are gold dust and they're absolutely fantastic to research and to retell to our delightful listeners.
And everyone who has sent in suggestions, thank you so much. We have noted all of them down. We've got a list that we are working through. We've got a stack of poisoners. There were far more poisoners than we ever thought possible. We still keep getting suggestions through, and we love some of the stories. So we are going to work through those, but definitely keep sending stuff through. If you have mentioned one actually ages ago and for some reason it hasn't come up, by all means remind us. Just send us a reminder and say, look, I want to hear this one, because we are here for you guys. The recipe for the Psycho Killer will be out on social media this evening. Give you a bit of time to work through the hangover if you're in the UK. Yeah. If you're in America, it'll be about hitting lunchtime, so you can get back on the drink absolutely acceptably. And see yourself into 2021. Start as you mean to go on with something completely insane, because this should be the year that we do everything insane, because there's no rules anymore. We really hope that you've enjoyed all the stuff that we've done this week to bring in the new year. We'll be doing more stuff on Patreon, so if you haven't joined us already, come and find us on there and see all of the extra bonus content you could be enjoying right now.
There is a link in the bio for the lovely merchandise we have. Some excellent hoodies going on. It's getting chilly. A hoodie is, I feel, in order. I'm going to have to get one for myself because it is getting really cold over here.
Mine arrived and they are damn snuggly. Well, yeah, so nice and cozy.
I shall have to get one of those myself. I look forward to it.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Oh.